The girls who were playing that tune to you on their musical bows, the Macrayana, were covered with beads. Beads in their hair, round their necks, over their shoulders, round their skirts and knees and ankles. Now that, you will admit, is nothing unusual for this part of the world. But only, perhaps, for this part of the world. The Zulu today, whatever he was in the past, is a master or mistress of the art of self-adornment. I think what strikes a stranger most forcibly is the consistency of their dress tradition and the variety of their individual expression of it. As a friend of mine once said, you can go amongst a crowd of Zulus and find everyone wearing some adornment, beads, earlobe decorations, coloured wool and so on, but no two will be exactly alike. One will have a few beads threaded into his hair over one eye, another a decorative pin on top, and so on. They have a genius for original touches. Now, we'll try to find out something about this art of self-adornment. It's a big subject to tackle, so we'll have to leave out most of their tricks and fancies. The married women's headdresses, their leopard skins, their shields, their wild cat skins, shawls, dresses, and so on, and stick to one subject alone, beadwork. You ask, how did beads first come to this part of Africa? Well, here's the answer of a man who is recognized as the foremost authority on the subject in South Africa, Mr. J.F. Schofield.
From the earliest times, men and women have adorned themselves by stringing shells, teeth, and the claws of animals into bracelets and necklaces. But the earliest type of beads with which we in South Africa are acquainted are the discs of pierced ostrich shell, which were first used by the late Stone Age peoples, copied by many of the Bantu tribes of the northern Transvaal, Bechuanaland, and southwest Africa, and finally imitated in white glass in Czechoslovakia and imported into this country in large quantities. Next in order of antiquity were the discs made from the tops and the long beads made from the central columns of the large sea shells of the genus Conus. These were probably manufactured at the towns which had been established between the 8th and the 11th centuries by Arab and Persian traders all along the east coast from Mogadishu to Sofala. We know from the beads which are found on the seashore at these sites of all the settlements that the Arab merchants were bringing rough glass beads from the Near East and cornelian beads from southern India for trading with the native peoples of the interior of Africa, from whom they bartered gold, ivory, iron and slaves, all of which found a ready market in Egypt, India, and Persia. After having existed for nearly 1,000 years, this trading system was broken up by the advent of the Portuguese, who, thanks to their superior armament, were able to secure footholds in both Africa, India, and the Persian Gulf, and thus direct this lucrative trade into their own hands. It is, however, evident from the Portuguese records that for many years they continued the trading practices of their predecessors and imported the coloured clay beads from Negapatam into Southeast Africa. The Portuguese overseas empire declined as rapidly as it had arisen, and in 1660 Negapatam fell to the Dutch, and its staple products were thenceforth contraband in all the remaining Portuguese possessions. And it was thus that the small tubular beads of self-coloured glass which had been used on the west coast of Africa for 200 years came to be imported to the east coast.